Welcome to the Money Tree Real Estate Investor Podcast, where we learn from real estate professionals across the industry. They will share about how they got into real estate, the big wins they have celebrated, the mistakes they have made along the way, and the advice they have for anyone following in their footsteps. Money really does grow on trees.
Hey everybody, it's William Hollins here for another episode of the Money Tree Real Estate Investor Podcast. Today I've got a really special guest. You can see the jerseys in the background. I've got Yannick Cugeau-Virgil, ex-NFL retired player. I'll let you introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into real estate and your story.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for having me on the show today. Really excited whenever I get a chance to share my story. So a little bit about me. Real estate is my second career. As you mentioned, started off playing in the NFL, had a career-ending knee injury, and unfortunately, I had to pivot. It's one of those things where you don't necessarily plan for, but it's inevitable. From a career, a career is going to end in sports, right? You're not going to play forever. Some people get to play for 10 years. Some people get just a cup of coffee in the NFL, and then some people just get to play for a little bit. For me, my red pill moment was the first month in the off season in my rookie year. I spent $20,000 in 1 month, and I had no idea what I spent it on. And at that time, I happened to latch on to Rich Dad Poor Dad, like everyone else in the real estate space. And the biggest thing that I took from that book was, it's not how much you make, it's about how much you keep. And in the world of professional sports, you've heard it in the past, athletes going broke within 2 to 3 years after leaving their sport. And I did not want to be a part of that statistic. So fortunately for me, I latched on to real estate, started on Bigger Pockets. I met a commercial developer in Nashville, Tennessee, which is where I played. He introduced me to the world of commercial real estate. And I fell in love with it. I love commercial real estate. And here I am today as a full-time real estate investor.
That's awesome, man. So that injury, man, that sucks. How did you kind of push through that and keep going, and just get into real estate like that?
Yeah, man, that's a good question. It was hard. It was hard. You know, mental fitness is really important, I think, for anyone. But specifically in the professional athletic space, there's a lot of pressure just trying to make the team, man, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, think about this, right? So the average person gets to go to work, they clock in, clock out, and go home, right? As a professional athlete, you're constantly on the radar. You just never know when you might be on ESPN. Every Tuesday is the day off in the NFL, right? So every Tuesday you have guys coming in, 5 to 10 guys coming in to try out to take your spot. Like, imagine if the roles were reversed in the corporate setting, right? You work for maybe Microsoft and you got 5 or 7 or 8, 10 tech people coming in every week trying to take your position, your job. That's a lot of stress, right? So mental fitness was something that I really had to focus on, because my job was on the line, man. My job was on the line, you know? We had a new coach coming in from the New England Patriots. And are you familiar with that, with their culture, right? It's a revolving door.
Oh, yeah.
You kind of had that feeling like, man, I need to be on my A game. You know, I need to always show up. So that was the some of the things that I had to go through. So, you know, what I really relied on was just trying to latch on to some sort of faith, right? Trying to latch on to some sort of understanding and belief that, you know, it's all going to work out how it's supposed to work out. And so that's really how I dealt with it.
Yeah, that's cool, man. So I definitely did not ever play on your level. You know, I'm a basketball player at heart. That was my first love is basketball. And I injured my ankle 2 years ago. So I actually ended up having to get surgery this year. Had a shredded ligament around the ankle, and I re-entered it over the summer. So I did PT, re-entered it. I'm in PT again right now, 10 months later, and just trying to get healed up, man. But, you know, it's every day you just take those little steps. And I think that translates to life. It translates to real estate as well. It's like, man, like, just every single day, like, consistency, little steps. Like, I'm doing my stretches, I'm doing my band exercises, and It's tough, but I think it builds character and, makes a difference in the long run.
Yeah, totally agree, man. I love sports because it like you said, it builds character, it teaches you a lot about adversity, a lot about teamwork, a lot about how to vet people, how to handle tough challenges, all of the things that we deal with in life, man. Sports is a great way to prepare yourself for life.
Definitely. So you talked about transitioning to real estate and you chose to go the private equity route. How did you decide to do that first?
So I had kinesiology on my resume, and that is nothing to do with the world of finance, business, or real estate. So I decided that I needed to pay my way in because I started putting in applications to like CoStar and different private equity firms. And every time they responded back, they said, "Well, you don't have any experience." So I said, I have some capital to do my own deals. Commercial real estate is difficult, right? There's a barrier to entry and the knowledge that you have to get before. And I wanted to kind of get that experience before raising other people's money. So paid my way in through brokerage, started off in multifamily investment sales and office and retail tenant rep. Then I ended up networking and earning a job in the asset management space for a real estate private equity firm in DC. Did that for a couple of years, moved my way up to other private equity shops. And that allowed me to get the education from an operational perspective and then also be around people who are cutting those checks, meaning that I was able to sit into a lot of the rooms where people were making decisions and I was just being a sponge, right? Being someone who is just soaking up a bunch of different knowledge because I wanted to apply some of those same strategies into my own business. So it was a way for me to earn while I learned. And I think that is
That's wise.
very crucial when someone is trying to get into commercial real estate, because if you just spend at least 1 year just soaking up games, soaking up knowledge, studying people's playbook, and not 100% focus on the money aspect, I think that is going to propel you very, very far in this game because that foundational knowledge is so crucial. And so I just used that strategy of following someone's playbook, right? Sitting on the sideline, so to speak, just soaking up game, right? Getting those mental reps. I think that's really important, right? And we talk about the sports concept as well. Just getting those mental reps and figuring out, how can I put my own business plan together, but also learn from the same mistakes that other people are doing as well. So I don't make those mistakes with investor capital. So that is the route that I took, and it was successful. We're my full-time investor and syndicator today.
Yeah, that's so cool, and so my one of my roommates played college football, and obviously he's watching film all the time, and like when we're watching a game together, even when we're playing Madden, like the way that he sees the game is so much different, and that is a result of him putting in hours and hours and hours and hours and years and years and years and years of watching film and having those conversations and being around people that knew more than him, and I think that's so wise that the approach that you took to spend time and soak up, other people's wisdom. I mean, like we're gonna make mistakes along the way, but there's so many mistakes that we don't have to make if we can to be in those conversations and hear other people's mistakes and learn from them and put our own twist on it.
And I'm going to keep going back to sports because you have that sport background too, right? It's just following the same playbook, man. Everyone tends to, like, if you look at the moguls in real estate, they tend to have the same playbook foundationally, right? The same thing in the NFL, same thing in professional sports. They all have the same playbook. They just tweak it a little bit to make it fit their specific strategy. So just follow the playbook.
Yeah, and some of the best advice that I've ever gotten in my life. I'm ambitious, I'm driven, I'm waking up at, like we discussed. I woke up at 4 a.m. this morning. I've been doing that for 2 weeks now and feeling in the afternoons, but it's gonna be a habit pretty soon, Lord willing. And with some of the best advice that I got, my question to one of my mentors was like, how can I grow as fast as possible? And he's like, hey man, like you got it all wrong, like you're asking the wrong question. He's like, And he gave an example of somebody within the firm that had grown too fast, and they got a very high position that they weren't ready for. On paper it looked like they were, but he said, like, man, like, don't try to grow as fast as possible. Like grow at the right pace, and every stage along the way, like, build that good foundation, like, get that baseline knowledge, and then build on that, and then build on that, and take things slow. And he's like, and then when you get to where you're going, where you need to go, you'll be ready for it.
Yeah.
And I can name, like, that's top five advice I've ever gotten in my life, you know?
Yeah, totally agree, man. I think it's in the world of technology and the world of just in the world where we live today, right? It's easy to kind of have that fast growing mentality just because we have things like automation and all those cool gadgets and tricks that we can do to kind of accelerate the process. But I think focusing on the foundation, like you said, is extremely important because, especially when you're dealing with larger deals, because it takes a lot of manpower, not manpower, but mental power, I would say, to tackle some of the small issues to just keep the lights on or keep the train moving or handle different aspects within the property. Someone has to asset manage a property, a building, right? And if you don't know how to put those systems in place, if you don't know how you're going to hire someone to handle that task in the future, then it becomes another job, right? So some of the small things that are not talked about in this field are so crucial, and it just comes down to the foundation that you mentioned.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so we talked through your private equity time. And we didn't dive in too much into asset management. So what specific portions of asset management are you focused on?
Yeah, so my partner is more so focused on the day-to-day asset management responsibilities, dealing with the property manager, all of the things that you need to do to kind of keep the train moving, right? For me, we focus on, or I focus on construction, overseeing the contractors, making sure that the value add business plan is being progressed accordingly, with accordance to our timeline. And so the asset management function is a separate beast, if you will, that people don't really talk about as well, because there's a lot of content out there about acquisitions, raising capital, and all of that stuff is important, I think, because you have to actually get the deal before you asset manage, right? But if you don't have that foundation, if you don't know how to asset manage, if you don't know how important it is to look at those reports, somebody's got to handle the accounting. Someone's all the little things. Someone has to do the blocking and tackling, right? Sometimes tenants can be professional tenants, and someone has to handle that. So asset management is just another job in itself. But I think the biggest advice I can give from someone who's kind of been in the asset management world professionally as well is that I think as you build out your commercial real estate business and your tackling larger properties, figure out how you're going to pay for an asset manager as well, because that is a separate job in itself that you can't focus on asset management for several properties and be in acquisition mode at the same time. It's just way, way too much work, right? I mean, we talk about it all the time in this space, right? You underwrite 100 to offer on 10 to get one, but if you're trying to scale up your business and grow, it's very difficult to do so when you're also asset managing, because someone has to manage the business plan, someone has to respond to the property manager, someone has to oversee the construction, all the little things that comes with asset management. So it goes back to what you said about foundation is how do you build a sustainable real estate private equity firm, right? And focusing on building a foundation is crucial, because you're just going to be creating more and more jobs for yourself, and it's going to be stressful, and it can probably fail really quickly. So
Definitely, yeah, I love that. So now you're out of that space. You're in asset management for your own properties. You're focused on multifamily, and you're also focused on some land banking right now. So, kind of walk us through that process. What are you doing right now, and then what's the 5-year plan?
yeah. So right now, our primary focus is acquiring multifamily throughout Baltimore City, and we are working on expanding into other markets. So we've done a couple of deals in the market. The challenge is obviously today with interest rates, right? It seems like It's very difficult to pencil a deal without looping in some sort of interest only on the front end to kind of catch up with the business plan as you renovate those units and increase the rents. Yields are very low. Cap rates haven't rised as aggressively as interest rates. So it's very challenging to make those deals pencil without some sort of engineering or creative financing, I think, whether it's doing some sort of a loan assumption, seller financing to kind of soften the cost of debt. So it's, you know, we're figuring out how can we look at development deals. You know, we still want to do deals. We still want to provide our investors some returns, but we don't want to get into any deal that's super aggressive. We have to fudge the numbers to make it work. So that's not what we do with our company. And then also on the land side, I have to tell people, you know, some of these smaller deals are very attractive. You know, they might take a lot of time, but we, as a family, still invest in single family BRRRs. You know, we have some land opportunities that we're working through the pipeline, as you mentioned, for development, some built to rent development, utilizing some infill lots within the city.
Awesome.
Those are some good opportunities, I think, especially when we talk about the affordable housing crisis. I believe that affordability is the biggest amenity in today's world. If you can go out there and you can provide basic affordable housing, doesn't have to be luxury, nice granite countertop, cabinets from Home Depot. It doesn't have to be something perfect. I think you're going to position yourself for a very fruitful real estate investing career for the foreseeable future. I don't think the affordable housing crisis is going to be fixed anytime soon. So,
okay.
That is essentially what we do.
Passive investors in real estate are able to receive a check every month. Some people call that mailbox money. We say money really does grow on trees. Visit the website at biggerpictureholdings.com, where we have a ton of free resources to help you learn more about planting your very own money tree.
Yeah, so you mentioned the BRRRR model. For those listeners that haven't heard of that or don't really know the nuances, can you tell us what those letters stand for, and then you know what that looks like a little bit?
Yeah. So it's buy, renovate, rent, refinance, repeat. It's probably my favorite strategy to do to grow wealth. You get to recycle your capital over and over and over, and it's a great way to grow wealth. Specifically, you know, we do a lot of that in the single family space. And contrary to what a lot of, you know, gurus say or investors say, they say, you know, don't invest in single family. I think the biggest difference between single family and multifamily, honestly, is just the scale and the risk, right? Investing in single family is not really that bad. For me, how I look at it is, how can I alleviate my risk? How can I reduce my risk, right? So I tend to lease those properties up with Section 8 tenants, because your biggest risk on single family is vacancy. And when you do the BRRRR method, we don't have repairs. We don't usually have issues because all of that work is done on the front end. And then from a managerial perspective, you know, there's somewhat of, you know, some pain dealing with properties that are not near each other and don't necessarily have the proximity. But I think there's a lot of yield in single family today. If you can do a BRRRR strategy, if you can figure out how to make things work accretively for you. So like, for example, we have something called a historic tax credit in Baltimore City, where we're able to buy properties for cheap and then rehab those properties. And now we have taxes that are in place for 10 years for like $100. So like that delta per deal is very, very, very high, you know, between the mortgage, you know, your reserves, et cetera, versus, you know, your net cash flow, you know? So I think those smaller deals can make yourself a lot of money. You know, that's not necessarily like our day-to-day focus. Our day-to-day focus is the private equity, but you know, we want to grow our wealth personally as well. And as a family. And I think, you know, those smaller deals are a great opportunity to do so.
That's cool. And that's one thing I love about having these conversations and just talking to different people. You know, I believe in real estate, but like anything, there's not one correct answer. It's like, hey, if you want to manage your own stuff, like you can go buy single family, you can do the Burr method, or you can flip, fi fix and flip, or if you want to raise money, like you can go buy your own deals, but if you want to be a passive investor, you can invest in so many different asset classes and different models as well. And I love that, and I think it's cool to be able to share that knowledge with other people.
Totally agree. Totally agree. Not everyone wants to run a private equity business. Not everyone wants to be a syndicator. Not everyone wants to own multifamily. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work that people don't talk about. You have to raise the capital. That's a another barrier
That is
to entry,
hard.
right? Right. That's a barrier to entry that you have to struggle with as well. You have to find a deal, underwrite the deal. So some people just kind of want to own their own deals and kind of sail off to the sunset, For us, it's how can we create a legacy? And we found that commercial real estate is a great opportunity to create a legacy and then also help other people invest their capital, right? The stock market is not looking good for the year of 2022. So a lot of our investors are feeling that pain and they want to benefit from multifamily, commercial real estate, and also the tax benefits as well, as we phase out of the depreciation, the bonus depreciation that is going to phase out starting 20 and ending 2022. So we love what we do. We're able to do good things in the world and also provide a space to invest capital.
That's so cool. So the last few questions I always like to end with, obviously we want to share knowledge, we want to share lessons learned. Have you seen any losses, experienced a loss in real estate, or just have something that you wish you would have done differently?
Yeah. So my first deal was a fix and flip property back in 2018. And I actually lost about $10,000 from that deal. I hired a mentor who I thought was on my side, who I thought was, in my best interest. And the biggest thing that I've learned from that team, from sorry, the biggest thing that I've learned from that deal was that you have to know who you're investing with. You have to do your due diligence. You have to make sure that all partners are aligned because we live in a world today where, because of technology, we have access to a whole bunch of deals, right? A whole bunch of sponsors, investors. And I think the due diligence part is not, there's not enough emphasis on due diligence when it comes to retail capital, kind of investing with people as a whole, right? There's not a lot of content out there about like how to actually the importance of rather the importance of doing due diligence and vetting out like your partnership team because that's very, 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 very important. You have to know who you're getting into deals with. You
Right.
have to know like the character behind the person because everyone can smile and things can all go well when everyone can be happy when things go well. Right. But it's about when things go south, how is that person going to respond to adversity? Right. I keep going back to the sports context. It's the same thing, right? How does your partner respond to adversity? And I always like to say, I don't want to invest with someone who's a peacetime general. I want to invest with someone that's a wartime general. Because
Let's go.
I know that at the end of the day, if something's wrong, I can sleep at night knowing that that person is going to take care of me. And that's how I look at myself when I'm talking to investors, when investors invest with our company, is that every deal doesn't go according to plan. You're either above or below pro forma, right? But if something does go bad, we're the first to have that connection. We're the first to communicate, right? Because old news doesn't age well. Oh, sorry, bad news doesn't age well, right? So it's about communication. It's about letting your partners know that you are working on their behalf, that you are working together, that you are going to take care of them if something goes wrong. And I think that's the biggest lesson that I learned was that you have to know who you're investing with because partnerships are like a marriage, right? Easy to get into, hard to get out
Yeah.
of.
Oh man, that's funny. And I think going back to our earlier conversation, take things slow with the sponsors as well. I mean, like, man, there's like you said, there's deals all the time. Like, there's no reason to rush. Like, do your due diligence, feel comfortable, but at the end of the day, you still do need to pull that trigger, so I think that's tough to get people to the finish line.
Totally agree. Totally agree, man. It's nobody is going to take care, or nobody is going to care about your money as much as you are, right? So you always have to be in the mode of, I got to protect my capital by any means, because I mean, it's people's livelihood, right? It's people's hard-earned capital, cash that they've worked tirelessly for over the years. So we take that with a great amount of responsibility.
Yeah, and it's scary, honestly. Like, as I'm engaging conversations with investors as well, it's like, man, like I treat your money as it's my money. I don't want to lose my money. So I certain like honestly, I would rather lose my own money than lose somebody else's money. Like if I did, like I'm gonna pay you back one way or the other. Like,
Agreed.
So last thing, man, I want to shine the spotlight on you. You've had a lot of success. You're not even 30 yet, I don't think. We're both in our 20s still. What's some of the biggest wins that you've had in real estate? Just want to celebrate you and those things.
Biggest wins that we've had in real estate. I mean, we've had a lot of wins in real estate. The biggest win, honestly, I would say the biggest win I've had in real estate was putting myself in the position to quit my job. I think that's the biggest win that I've had, because that was something that I wanted to ensure that I was able to create enough passive cash flow to replace my W-2 income. And I think when we talk about financial freedom, that is exactly what that is, right? It's having enough cash coming in to replace your W-2 income, so you don't have to work a job. Because who really wants to work, right? I've never, I mean, I did not like waking up and I had to be somewhere at 9 o'clock and I couldn't leave at 5 p.m. I think that's just me personally. Like I enjoy my freedom. I enjoy like doing things when I want to. So maybe that lifestyle fits me. But I think financial freedom, man, is something that everyone can benefit from. And that's something that I'm extremely proud about, is just being able to put myself in that position to achieve that financial freedom. So I think that's the
Man,
biggest win in real estate for me.
that's awesome, dude. That's such a great story, and it's such an inspiration. Like you said, anybody can passively invest in deals, and like that's literally like not doing any work past the due diligence. Like you can if you want to. I mean, you can dive in as much as you want to into the details, but you don't have to. And I think that's so life-changing to be able to be able to quit your job and pursue other things.
Man. Yeah, it's the beauty of real estate. It's the beauty of real estate. You work hard, and over time, you're not gonna hit a home run probably your first deal, right? But it's about having those deals kind of compound over time and add over time, and you just keep doing this for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, you're gonna be set. And generationally as well. So I really love real estate.
I do too. I can tell you do, man. I can tell. So, well,
Absolutely.
hey, man, I really enjoyed getting a visit with you today, brother.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for being, allowing me to share my journey and what we've accomplished. And I'd love to connect with your listeners, and I'd love to connect with anyone out there that wants to get into real estate. We have a passive guide. My company is called Merlin Acquisitions. That's Merlynn Acquisitions. So if you go to merlinacquisitions.com/passive guide, we're going to give you a free passive guide for syndication properties. So if you're interested in learning how to get into syndications, you want to do due diligence on sponsors, you want to learn everything soup to nuts about syndications and how to invest, definitely check out that guide. You're definitely not going to be disappointed. So thanks a lot.
Yes, sir. And what are other ways that they can connect with you?
Reach out to me via the website. We have an email address for our admin. And then also we do have a podcast as well. It's called the Mogul Marathon Real Estate Podcast. Our goal is to teach people about commercial real estate. We have entrepreneurs, developers, fund managers, a whole bunch of commercial real estate professionals, and we want to create real estate moguls. So check out the Mogul Marathon Real Estate Podcast.
That's awesome, man. Thank you so much, Yannick.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Like and subscribe below. A new episode will air every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Are you looking for more content? Visit our website, biggerpictureholdings.com. And remember, money really does grow on trees.